early today. Geologists say this is by far the strongest eruption in the latest series.
Welcome to the Outer Limits of Inner Truth Radio Show. OuterLimitsRadio.com. I'm your host, Ryan. Today we are going to be doing an introspective interview with and forensic soul analysis on Miss Pamela Page. Miss Page is an individual who's thriving in five different careers: photography, acting, real estate. I mean, she's just doing it all. She's so driven, and she has this spirit where every time I've observed her firsthand around people, she elevates people. She drives people. She makes them better than where they are, and I think that a lot of people look to her, and she just has a very strong energy. And I want to do this interview with Miss Page because you can tell that she's going to be very, very, very famous soon. So I want to get her before she reaches that big point and we can no longer talk to her and they cite this show as a good reference. I have to tell you this, Miss Page and I are relatives. We're not blood related, but she's basically a family member, and I've known her for a very long time. So I've seen her continue to thrive and be very successful, and it's a great honor to be having her on the show today. So without further ado, let us begin today's show on Miss Pamela Page. Our special guest today on the Outer Limits of Inner Truth Radio Show is Miss Pamela Page. She is an artist. She is a photographer. She's an entrepreneur. She's an amazing real estate expert. And she's also a person who's very driven. She's somebody who's accomplished a lot and continues to accomplish a lot. Very artistic. Always involved in a lot of big events. So, Miss Pamela Page, welcome to the program. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you guys so much for having me. I'm really excited.
Excellent. Miss Page, there are people who want to succeed, who maybe they don't put the time or effort in. What makes you so driven that you're succeeding in all different aspects? Because, you know, you're succeeding in multiple fields of industries.
Well, I haven't always had this much success. The success I've had thus far is just due with trial and error and never giving up and just continuously driving forward and gaining knowledge and surrounding myself with the right-minded people along the way.
Okay. So what a role it has. Can you go a little more about your drive? Like, what is the driving force behind it? I mean, why do you decide to put a lot of intensified efforts in while some may not? Like, what is the driving force behind it?
I think it's just the way I was born. I've always been up to no good and shenanigans and digging deep and wanting to find answers, and enough never seemed like it was enough. Being satisfied, I'm satisfied for a little bit and then I get bored and I want more. So it's just something that I've always been like since I was a little girl.
Okay, so everyone, I guess, is born their own certain way, and you were naturally born driven, but what are some of the ways that you could teach people to be driven? What are some of the ways that I guess you would recommend that people can tap into their inner drive or to become more motivated or more driven to take on their own challenges and own dreams?
Man, that is a good question. So as a senior agent at my real estate firm, I had a team of about 30 people, and I tried so many different ways to teach this group of people of all different backgrounds and upbringings. And I have to say, there's only two or three people in the room that had drive. And I just don't necessarily know if it's something that you can teach. Either you want it or you kind of want it and kind of doesn't count. I just don't know if it's something that can be taught. I don't know the answer to that. I wish I could tell you something. If you have any sort of input where you can teach me, because you're also as driven, Ryan, you're very similar to me. I've had numerous people ask me that same question. Like, I don't know. Like, I'll answer the phone at 12 o'clock at night. That's the difference between someone else saying, no, I don't want to answer it. I'm available.
Okay. But, you know, I'm kind of curious about this, is that you ask people on average, and they said, you know, do you want nice things? Do you want to live in a great house? Do you want to have this, you know, amazing life? And you think they say yes, but – and then you ask them, I go, well, what are you doing for it? And it's one thing I noticed about some people is that they're really into the lottery. They're waiting – I guess they're interested in having it get handed to them. And one thing I've known about you since that time I've known you is that you – I don't see you taking that mentality. It always seems to be a battle with you. Do you feel that – in order to be successful, that it has to be a struggle,
or can you attain success without struggle? Do you think that is it unhealthy? Are you going in the wrong direction if you are experiencing so much struggle in a path you perceive to be successful?
Such a good question. I know on a personal note, I have been through a tremendous amount of struggle to the point of being homeless and while pursuing my dreams. And then you have other people who have this great education, very wealthy parents, and they just like things handed to them. I never had that luxury. So I don't know. I also, I don't believe in socialism at all. I believe in capitalism. I believe in you reap what you earn. You reap what you sow. And it's just the way I've been raised. I mean, even when I was growing up on my farm in Texas with my parents, every single season we would plant the grounds, and we're talking a huge ranch. We would till the ground. We would throw the seeds in the ground. My mom would be saying next to me, she's like, reap what you sow, reap what you sow. As I'm throwing the seeds out hand by hand, reap what you sow. And we're singing this song. And then my dad comes over, we cover up the dirt. And then the next season, we're literally pulling the plants and the food out of the ground that we created. So I have always had that mentality of reap what you sow. You want it, you get it. No one else is going to do it for you. So I guess just put that with the drive that I was born with driven parents, and a passion for life. And this is what it is. As far as the struggle with people, their different situations and circumstance, I think honestly, struggle is healthy. That's really cool that you even asked that. Struggle is healthy because if someone just hands it to you, it's so much sweeter when you win and you want it on your own. And I live by that, those values.
Okay. I want to ask you back to what you were saying about being on the farm and planning. Did that teach you give you a good structure for patience? What do you learn about farming? What are some of the lessons that what a person could learn from farming?
If you're going to be a farmer, don't plan on having nice nails or pretty feet, and don't plan on making a lot of money. So that's why I don't live there anymore. But as far as did it teach me patience, I was working so much from 5 a.m. in the morning until 10 o'clock at night, milking the cows and farming the field and pulling the produce and then shucking the corn, and just day after day, this is what we did, baling the hay and you name it. There's always something to do. And I was just like, my gosh, does it ever end? So does it teach patience? I never had time to sit still in order to literally watch the ground grow, because I had to go do something else, because there's a constant turnover. And what if you have a bad season and one thing that you're producing, you got to produce other things. So you have to constantly be having numerous plates rotating and strategizing with how to survive solely off the land.
Okay. When you think about your childhood and you think about growing up at the farm, are there any lessons that you learned as growing up that were very crucial, that would be fundamentally crucial to you having the mentality that you have now for that drive? And are there any lessons that you think that parents should be instilling in their children very early on that maybe the majority of society is not doing right now?
Yes. Teach your children how to say yes, ma'am, and no, sir. Old school respect. What is going on with the kids nowadays? I was raised by, my dad was 78 when he passed away, and he was born in 1930. And Ryan, the stories I heard from this man and what he truly went through in the Great Depression and poverty and not eating for days after days, and how the famine just taking everybody out, and to survive through these extreme hardships. And then I look at the children nowadays with like a handout. I don't know what the hell has happened in this world, in America, where we are all about the American dream and getting your 40 acres in a mule and working it, I just feel like there's a huge disconnect, that we're so disconnected from agriculture to, you know, the metropolitan area and big cities. There's, I mean, look at the children. Children don't even know, like, when you literally give elementary kids a group of vegetables to choose from, they can't even point out what a cabbage is to a lettuce. They don't even have these basic fundamentals of what feeds their life. So as far as what parents can instill in their children, teach them the basic necessities.
Okay, so teach them the stuff, where food comes from.
Yeah.
Manners, basic things.
Mannerisms, man. Like, oof, just as simple, yes, ma'am, no, sir. I would get backhanded if I disrespected my parents real quick. I wouldn't eat the food that I helped plant. There was no room for that. And I don't know. There's something going on with the children nowadays, and I'm very, very disappointed.
You know, it's not the first time I've heard that. A couple people I've worked with say that they really don't want anything to do with millennials. Do you think it's a generational, a generational waste? Or one way, do you think there's any hope for millennials from your perspective? Is there anything that they could actually be doing to turn their lives around? Or is there anything that they could be doing to turn their lives around?
Oh, my God. Wow. I know that a lot of the millennials have voiced the same thing that I was just talking about. They're like, you know, I have this high school education. I don't even know how to sew a button on my shirt or how to do this and that, because they're so involved in social media and their nose to an iPad. They almost are losing the disconnect from their friend sitting across from them. It's just a whole new wave/rage of technology that we're losing a lot of the human interactivity and connection with Mother Earth.
Okay.
And what can they do to turn it around? It starts with our schools and our laws and discipline.
There are people who might be strong academic. There are people who can ace a test. They know they can recite facts, and they have book smarts. And then there are people who have street smarts. And I wanted to ask, from your perspective, what do you think has a stronger value in this world, book smarts or street smarts? And do you need to have a balance of both, or can you be very successful utilizing either one or the other?
Absolutely. All the above. You can be very successful if you are really good at one thing, but you need to know how to delegate and delegate to the right person to fill that hole. Or, in like my case, I'm very good at both things. So I like to have that knowledge about running my own business from being street smart and book smart. But yeah, you can definitely have it all. You just got to be smart enough to know how to delegate and do it with precision and choosing that person correctly.
One thing I've observed about you over a number of years is you seem to have a very warm way of persuading people to get excited about projects that you're working on. I mean, you've worked on, I don't know how many projects and how many events and how many movies, and you've been the person that was orchestrating crews of hundreds, and you've gotten people so involved and so pumped up. And the question I have is, how does a person sell others and get others excited about their vision? What are some of the ways that you've presented visions to others, and what are some of the ways that you've gotten people excited about your vision? And actually, how can that same principles and skill sets be applied to others who wish to do the same thing, Pam?
Good question. Thank you for asking.
You.
Oh, yay. What a fun question to answer. Okay, where do I start? I'm honest. I'm honest, and I do everything with such vigor, and the projects that I create are so unique. And I mean, my logo that I use for my photography is Pamela Page, something different. I always go for something different that's so outside the box where people are just taken by surprise by what it is, because it's so unique. And just really having thorough plans, from storyboards to whatever I need to do with materials to present so I can paint in a picture for people. And then I just align myself with the appropriate parties to make that happen, because...
So you're saying you do things, even if you're doing a business-related project, you do a visual storyboard of it, even if it's just something?
Oh, yeah. I visualize it in my head first, and I strategize. I'm like, does this make sense? Is this worth my time? How am I making money, and can I impact the world doing this?
Pam, when you present an idea to a group of individuals and you want to get them excited about it, what are some of the main principles behind every idea that you do? You said that there's three rules or three key ingredients, or maybe more key ingredients, before you decide you wish to go forward with an idea.
Absolutely. I always visualize the product and strategize if it's going to be able to impact the world. Will I make money? Is it going to be worth my time? And will other people be affected by what I've created?
When you say affected by it, what do you mean affected?
I like people to be affected by what they see. I don't want them just to look at something I've created and be like, oh, well, and not remember it. But when people see what I do, they remember it, because it is almost either slap in the face visually, or it's a tickle on the ribs, you know, with some slapstick comedy. It really just depends on the current mood I'm in when I create. But it's always something that people will remember. My logo that I go by in photography is Pamela Page Something Different, because I yearn to always make something different. Outside the box thinking is where I am my happiest.
Who are some of the people that you've admired that have impacted you as far as giving you strong mentality for success? And also, what are some of the things you'd recommend to other people in order for them to become successful? Are there any books that you should be reading? Are there any people they should be looking up to? Like, what's your take on that?
Well, my biggest person in my life that really saw me as an artist before I even could draw was my mother. My mom was, she was fierce, a fierce woman to deal with, and in a good way. She didn't take anything from anybody. And as far as like the icons, one of my favorite people is Mae West. I just loved her so much. I actually played her in a couple of school plays, and I did a monologue with her, and I love everything about Mae West, from her quotes to, she was just ahead of her time. She didn't care. Man, I wish she was here. Sometimes I like to think I'm the reincarnated Mae West.
You just maybe.
Maybe. She died in 1980. I was born in 1980.
Yes, and also let's just remind everyone that when Pam was born, Mount St. Helens was erupting while this was happening.
Yep, that is correct.
Yes, yes, you, the world knew that you were being born.
I am telling you. Great.
As far as the, you know, you do business and you also do artistic creativity. And what I want to know is that does your brain change when you're doing both? I mean, can a person, are you into your left brain or right brain? And also, can a person be successful in both?
Yeah, of course a person can be successful in both if they have the brain folds necessary. as far as being able to turn on my creative side to the numbers side, it's definitely... it's difficult, because when I'm really thinking outside the box, I need to be in that realm for weeks to months, and which is why I'm so very thankful for real estate, because during the busy season, I can be all about numbers and strategizing. And even though, yes, I can creatively strategize and go and photograph pictures of these, you know, beautiful listings, it's still very much straightforward. There is not a whole lot of outside the box thinking you can do, even though I love my career. I love the people. It's so much fun. But doing both, I really try not to do both at the same time, because it's crucial for me to give 100% to my real estate and my clients. It's an extremely highly demanding job, and I really want to do the best I can for all of my clients. And then within my art, I don't want to deprive the world of what I can truly produce. And sometimes that takes me in going into very, very dark places. And I don't need to be in dark places when I'm with my clients because they're expecting a happy person. But a lot of artists get, you know, we like the Hemingways, and we just have to get dark sometimes to create some of the best things.
Pam, there are people who put their personal life online, and there are those who don't do it. And I want to know, when you present more of your personal life to people, or you're more revealing with your life to people, does that make you more relatable in the business world? Or do you think that there's a fine line between what a person should put out in public and what they should keep in private?
I think that's just all depending on the person you're asking. I mean, you ask some of these big time reality stars, if you really want to call them stars, because they're putting out their, how do I say this in the nicest way? They're just literally putting out crap, and people just love to feed their brain with nonsense. And so you have that side, and then you have other realms of like true, legit darkness. You know, a lot of the reality stuff is made up, and producers put a lot of pressure on these people and twist stories around. But as far as, I'm not trying to deviate too much from your question, but I personally don't care what people think about me. And I literally just got off the phone with one of my clients, one of my buyers, his name is Brian, and he's like, you know, I see your Facebook post. He's like, I can tell you're going through a hard time. He's like, let me take you to dinner. Like the most amazing things. Like, I had one of my other clients is just like, shows up to my art show, and he's like, I can see that you need some help. Like, I just love that. And I'm just surrounding myself with real people that have real problems and also really successful, because life is a roller coaster ride, and we each learn from the other person. And I don't know. I'm just all about being honest and real, and that's why people love me or hate me, and I don't really care which one it is. I prefer the love, but I'm not going to be a people pleaser and trying to make people and be fake for someone for them to feel comfortable. I have no time for that.
Okay. So you know what? At one point, we're going to get to the beginning of, you had some traumatic events that have happened in your life. You had two near-death experiences. Can you please tell our audience what happened to you, and then also explain what happened to you when you had a major accident, how that changed your life?
Oh, yeah. So I'm spiritually inclined because of these traumas, but I call these traumas also gifts, if you will, in life, because it really opened me up to a whole nother realm, or Pandora's box, if you will, of the spirit world. When I was 8 years old, I had an out-of-body experience. I drowned in a swimming pool. I was not aware of how to swim, and I witnessed my body floating, detaching from myself, floating up into this white tunnel, and I was literally, and I flipped my spirit body over, and I'm looking at the people jumping off the diving board onto my head, and I've been floating down, gasping for air, and I just feel such peace and no pains or anything. And then I watch someone jump in, grab me and pull me out, and they have to resuscitate me, and then my spirit comes back into my body. The very next day, and this is on a family vacation, God did not want me in heaven yet. He was probably like, oh, I got to keep a special watch.
He's probably like, I need some more time. This is my vacation.
Yeah, exactly. The family vacation, I drowned one night. The very next day we're in Texas, we're in San Antonio at this place called Enchanted Rock. It's the largest granite rock in the world. And I'm reading my map upside down because I don't really know how to read. I'm only 8. You would think I would be like under my mom's wing because of what happened to me before. But oh no, no. I had to venture off, go to the steepest part of the mountain, trip on rocks, and I start rolling down a 360-foot drop. And the only thing that catches me from me falling into complete oblivion is a sticker bush. And I have a picture of the bush and the actual rock and where I got caught. I mean, it's in Texas, but literally God was like, no. You are not.
No, I still need my vacation. Okay, no, I've got a question that I'm sure everyone who's listening right now has got to be asking. And that the first question is that, did your dad lose all of his hair after that? And did everyone around you start drinking heavily after this?
My dad told my mom. Because I had to get a whole bunch of stitches on the back of my head. I got a concussion from the second incident on the family vacation.
Jeez.
My dad's like, you are never taking my little girl on a family vacation again. I show up back home, my head's completely in bandages. so that was the family vacation. I remember my mom looking back at me in the RV, and I'm thinking to myself, I almost died twice back to back. Like, God hates me. Like, I'm not good enough to be an angel yet. So this is my...
No, God's trying to tell you, no.
Vacation. So this happened when I was 8. Fast forward, but not too fast. I'm 10 years old, summer vacation, 2 weeks out of, was I in fourth grade, going into fifth grade. And, my mom, myself, and my sister, we are driving in our truck doing about 20 miles an hour. And we just left the, supermarket and we look right. We look left. There's a whole bunch of 18-wheelers on the left side, so we're easing up on the railroad tracks, making sure that the train's not coming on the left, and we get hit on the right side. And I still get flashes of that. My sister ended up getting decapitated, and I hit my head so hard where I still wear a 10.5-inch scar across my forehead. I hit so hard on the actual dashboard, I fly out the back of the truck window. I still have scars on my back, fly 364 feet where I almost hit right under the train, but instead I hit on the rocks and, just lay there while the train comes to a screeching halt. My mom gets thrown out of the truck. And I don't get knocked out. I'm in complete shock, and I'm trying to get up to run to my family, and I can't because my foot is completely just dangling off. So I'm dragging my body to them, screaming for them, and it's just, man, Ryan, the EMS, literally the EMS was on the other side of the train track, so they couldn't even get to us. The ambulance couldn't get to us, so they had to like go between the actual cars with the stretcher, and I witnessed them pulling the white sheet over my sister as I'm looking out the ambulance. I'm screaming bloody murder. They have to strap me in because I'm just like in complete and absolute shock, and I'm trying to run around, and my mom's screaming. It was just the most horrifying experience. I still have nightmares from it from time to time.
So it was your they were both pronounced dead at the scene?
No, my sister Gaylin is the only one that passed away. My mom survived, and yeah, so my sister died. 3 days later in the hospital, No, 3 days later, I found out she passed away, but I already knew she died because I with what I saw. But it was just such a shock to me. And then after I got released from the hospital, I couldn't make it to her funeral. And it was like day 10, I had this dream, such a different dream whenever I'm connecting to the other side, compared to my normal dreams. And I have very elusive dreams, but it's just a different feeling. And this time I had long blonde hair and I was sleeping, and I have a dream that my sister and I are riding bikes together, and she came up to me and she yanked my hair, which is what she would have done. And underneath my bed, Ryan, my hair gets yanked. I jump up. I get goosebumps down my neck. And I knew my sister was in the room with me, telling me she crossed over. And I'm like 10 years old. And I just knew these things. And I do consider them gifts. Because most people, even as Christian or whatever religion they are, they'll search their whole entire lifetime to get to experience some of these amazing experiences I've had with different spiritual entities. And I'm so confident that there is a life hereafter, which is apparently why I'm on your show for The Outer Limit. but yeah, man, these are all true accounts.
That's amazing. Now, that whole experience, just if you look at that one event, what did that do fundamentally to change your perception on life for the rest of since that time? Well, how did that impact you? I'd say that maybe the two biggest things that it did impact you.
Yeah, definitely. Life is short. Kids are mean. That's what I found out.
Kids were taunting you?
Yeah, like I got bullied so bad when I went back to school. It was
horrible.
Ryan, it was so bad. I can't even believe that parents would allow their children to be like that, because
they were bullying you because you said your sister died in a train crash?
Yeah, because their parents were talking all this smack about things that weren't even true, because they had nothing else better to do in this small little town but just talk nonsense. And and you know, with their parents' mouth, it rubs off on the children, which brings me back to with the millennials, like, what's going on? Look at the direct source. Look at the parents. Question is, ask the parents what's going on. So yeah, that I was bullied, and it was the start of a very long, hard life for me after that. Up until now, because things change, and yes.
Well, when this thing happened, did you have an increase in sensitivity, a metaphysical insensitivity? Were you able to perceive spirits? Were you able to be more sensitive to others' feelings in ways that you hadn't been before this event had occurred?
I was always hypersensitive when it came to animals. I'm very, very hypersensitive and their feelings. Remember, I was raised on a ranch, so me interacting with other kids was just only in school. And, but you know, for 8 years, I wasn't really around a lot of people or socialized, because I was on a ranch. My friends were my animals, and we had a great time together. So, but being sensitive to animals and being able to read animals and their disposition. My mom was a dog groomer as well, and she was very great, just amazing with animals, the dog whisperer. And she, you know, she always told me, she's like, I could always read animals. She goes, but I can never read people. And she goes, that's why I choose to be around animals, because I'll know if they're going to bite me a person. I'll never know if they'll stab me in the back. And just with that alone, taught me how to read animals, and how, and I couldn't understand how people couldn't be as genuine and as having unconditional love such as animals. Like, I always had that as a little girl, and that's why my mom kept me away from people, because she said people are mean and cruel and you don't have that in you. And she told me I just didn't, because I wasn't raised like that. And yeah, so when I went back to school, I had to endure a lot. And then I didn't want to go home. I didn't want to be crying to my mom because she was going through some trauma. She just buried her child, like, just cruel. And it really taught me to defend myself. I got into many fights in schools, and because I realized that being a nice person and crying and praying for them wasn't doing it. I literally had to beat people's ass to get off me. And then I developed a different persona of this, like, badass person. Don't mess with her. She's raged. And why am I raged? Because you guys are pushing me to a point of no return at the age of 10.
Pam, those kids that should have been vacuumed out of the womb, had they... I'm not making any friends today. I don't care. Yeah, you're talking. I don't care. I'm like, oh, it's a lesson learned from Pam on the page. If they had not been bullying you, would you have ever developed that sense of fighting? And do you now feel that sense of, you know, that development of your defending yourself served you very positively throughout the course of your life?
Absolutely. Okay. Without a shadow of a doubt. I am so thankful for them. And many of them I'm still friends with on, you know, through social media platforms. And I look at their life and I look at mine and I just said, thank God for you and what you did to me. Thank you.
Did you make peace with them? Have you brought peace to a lot of these people? Made peace with
them? Yeah, my peace is in my success.
But I mean, have you individually solved, like, told those people who created that pain for you? Have you forgiven them, and sought your forgiveness for what they did?
You know, it's never really discussed. I also, you know, when we're growing, we all go through different periods in life. Your brain's not quite as developed. We are the product of our environment. Who knows? They probably were going through hell at their house. So I don't know. I mean, of course I forgive them, and I'm honestly thankful for the pain that they caused me now, because I probably wouldn't be this strong, independent woman as I am now.
And speaking of strong, independent women, you mentioned Mae West before, but are there other people in the modern era that which we live in that you would define as strong female archetypes, the ones that people in our generation could look up to and see?
Of course. I mean, of course we have the staple, Angelina Jolie. What that woman does, has done, will do until the end of her time, and the story that is going to be told after she passes. Wow.
What is it about her that you admire so much?
Just her love for all people. And her actions, not just her words, how progressive she is, how she adopted a child before she even had a man. And she just is such a strong alpha woman, and she has a heart of gold and so much talent. I just adore her, and she really is a woman that I look up to and just go, wow.
That she's somebody. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And I always thought that you were going to connect with Cameron Diaz too. She looks like somebody that you guys are. Like.
Oh yeah, how could I forget about my girl Cameron? Definitely, I finally got to meet her. Everyone thought that we were twin sisters.
Yeah, I think you guys are twins. I always thought that you guys look very similar.
And you know, we actually talk the same. Our demeanor is the same. I went to see one of her seminars. It was very intimate, thank goodness, and had great seats too. And you know, she was talking about her the body book that she just released, and just her demeanor on stage. I mean, she literally was up on stage flipping people off. You know, she's just funny.
She reminds you. I saw a lot of similarities to you. I have to see if you guys are connected on some kind of soul level. Okay, we'll have time for two more questions. And one of the questions I want to ask you is if there is a person who has experienced a traumatic event or has experienced hardship, what do you recommend for them to heal and to recover and to kind of push their life on a path of progression of happiness and healing?
Good question. I can only say this because I'm going through it right now. And I am trying to mend my heart And I, thanks to you and your show, I was able to do a remote healing with Jeff Casper. And I literally felt him working on me. I think he's in Colorado. I'm here in New York. And I literally could feel him working on me. And I have a Skype call with him because I want to know how he did it. Like, it's just, to me, metaphysics, the coolest thing. And so I'm working on repairing my heart. And I went to this spiritual healer. She practices like all these Native American techniques. And man, Ryan, after I got done with her, her name is Anya, I give you her information. Oh, Ryan, I felt like I was levitating. I felt like I literally just skimmed across 6 inches off the ground to go and talk. Yeah, go ahead.
So you think that somebody should do this, that they should contact Jeff Casper, they should contact – I mean, these things are applying to you, but in general, what kind of person do you recommend that they to heal?
Just fixing your heart, fixing your spirit, aligning yourself, readjusting yourself, detoxifying your environment, burning sage, getting right with yourself, juicing. You know, don't turn to the fun things, the drugs and alcohol. I mean, literally, that's the opposite as far as fixing your spirit. And, you know, get a spiritual healer. Go to church. Find Jesus. Go help somebody. Get right with yourself.
So can you find Jesus even without religion? I mean, do you need to go to – how do you – is there any other way you could do it?
I always believe that as students, we need teachers. And you can't teach unless – I mean, there's those that's born with the gift, but you have to – even those with gifts have mentors to learn how to funnel the energy. And it's all just about training. So can you do it on your own? No. We all need help. It's going to take you longer if you do it on your own. You'll probably get there, hopefully, but find a good, strong mentor and see if there's a nice connection, because not every mentor in person is going to be the right one for you. It's all about the connection and the chemistry that you share with that person. So... yeah.
Miss Pamela Page.
Right.
She is a entrepreneur. She is an artist. She's a successful business professional. Very charismatic. Huge, huge heart. If you think about the average American waistline, you times that by like 50. That's Pamela Page. And we can learn more about Miss Pamela Page by going to her website at PamelaPage.com. And you can also find her number scribbled in most gentlemen's restrooms all across the country.
Yes, for a good time, make sure you call me, boys.
Absolutely. All right. Great honor to have you with us today, Ms. Page.
Thank you, darling. Bye.
Joining us now is the Phoenix Rising, globally respected psychic medium, Ms. Kerry O'Connor. A little more about Ms. Kerry O'Connor. Get a reading with Ms. Kerry O'Connor by going to her website at kerryoconnor.com. Ms. O'Connor, what can you tell us about Ms. Pamela Page?
Ms. Pamela Page is a seeker of seekers. She's an explorer. I love that she referred to, I love to be outside of the box, think outside of the box. And what I found fascinating, Ryan, is when she was born, the moment that Mount St. Helens erupted, that is really... significant to me, because she comes in with that fire volcano kind of energy that she doesn't hear the new word no. She talks about her mother being fierce. She has that same fierceness that I speak of a lot. Where she gets people activated is that she's that direct line to her heart, and that heart energy she's passionate about. She's fired. It feels warm, and it literally ignites other people. So she's not only a seeker where she's I know she spent lifetimes as an explorer. I saw Lewis and Clark, like that kind of thing, over in Europe. So she's done this many, many, many times, and she's not afraid of foreign languages, foreign places. And if anything, she's really developed a taste for going into the dark and foreign places where a lot of people wouldn't go into. And I love the way she described the left and right brain, where she literally has to be in that right brain for months at a time. So she really gets into exploring again the dark places that the right brain, the unconscious, subconscious patterns, you know. And she, you know, talks about other artists that like Hemingway that had a difficult time relating to it, ended up committing suicide. She's balanced with the left brain where she could flip to the numbers, do her real estate, do the other number things. And she says she flips it where it's difficult. When I look in the middle of her brain, she's got a pathway from her third eye to her occipital bone. It looks like a goal path. That shows me how she does go between the left and the right. And again, she could experience it difficult, and I could understand being months in that downloading mode of that creative energy and then go to something very linear. I also have to adjust my energy. And at times, it's almost like your eyes have to adjust. Like if you've been in a movie theater and you go out during the daytime and your eyes kind of do that thing, that's what it could feel like at first. But she's an amazing woman. A lot of respect for her.
Excellent. And did you see anything about picking up anything about her past lives?
I thought it was interesting that she wondered if she was a reincarnation of Mae West. I'm not seeing her as a literal reincarnation of Mae West, but she definitely had time in the theater before. That wasn't too far back. It was right during the change of the century where she was an outside-the-box thinker. I'm also seeing her taking roles where she was a female and she dressed up as male and even got male roles where she tricked the people. It's almost like the opposite of that Tootsie role, that Tootsie movie.
Yep.
That guy that ended up, he was dressed up as a female.
I think it was Dustin Hoffman.
Yeah, there you go. So she's done that, and that's in her energetic history. And again, it was toward the beginning of the 1900s, and then she was found out about it, and a lot of people, like energetically, so symbolically, stoned her because they felt betrayed. But she set a seed in the theater that is still having the effects to this day of people being backing themselves up when they have a role and they have to go outside of the box. That backing up is so important because that's the difference between achieving something and not achieving it.
Got it. And Ms. O'Connor, do you sense that her mother, father, and sister, who in the spirit world are currently with her, are they doing anything to help her, to inspire her, to even look out for her in this waking reality?
Absolutely. They look like a triangle behind her. So the dad is on the right side, the mom's on the left side, and the sister stands directly behind her. And they do this U shape where they have all different forms of a light. The father shows me a lighthouse, so he helps her see the future. The mom gives her that, again, fierce energy. And where their sister lines her, it's right in her blind spot, but it gives her this soul support where whenever she feels, again, especially emotional or lost, she helps align what I call the inner compass. And that aligns us to our inner self, our own guides, our own higher self, the celestial world, and they really help with that.
And last question I have for you, Mr. Connor. Is there any particular issue that Ms. Page should be working on for this life incarnation? Is there anything that she's specifically here to work on, to work through? Or is there anything that is hindering her capability of reaching a level of peak growth?
There's a part of Pamela's energy, I call it, she's an outside in person. So her journey here, Ryan, is to activate and touch a lot of people. When people have her energy pattern, a lot of times when it comes to personal relationships, that could be the challenge, right? And it's like being able to bridge success and really personal relationships that she has when she ignites other people. She's come a long way with it, and she's coming further this actually next couple of years for her, especially February of this 2017. She's making a major turning point in that part of her life where it's like releasing past heartache and pain and suffering and sacrifice, even past life residual hangovers. That's really going to illuminate her to her next phase. I wouldn't be surprised if she gets this project getting dropped in her lap that's out of the blue, that is very different at the end of November, and that's going to bring her to a new height of awareness and artistic creativity, and again, being able to show people visually how to think outside of the box. Beautiful.
Excellent. Ms. Carrie O'Connor, it was a really great analysis of Ms. Pamela Page. I want to thank you so much. To learn more about Ms. Carrie O'Connor and to get a reading with Ms. Carrie O'Connor, please go to her website at carrieoconnor.com. Thank you so much, Ms. O'Connor.
Thank you, Ryan. It's always my pleasure.
Joining us now is the Astrophenom, our astrologer, Ms. Constance Dellis. You can learn more about Ms. Constance Dellis and get your chart done with Ms. Constance Dellis by going to her website at constancedellis.com. Ms. Dellis, what can you tell us about your chart reading analysis on Ms. Pamela Page?
Well, lucky for us and lucky for me, I have not only her birthday year, but also the time, which is not always the case unless somebody knows it. and she knew it. So we have an accurate chart, and Pamela is a Taurus, but the more, let's say, telling part of her chart, I mean, she's still a Taurus, is the Gemini influence. Moon in Gemini and also Gemini rising. So for the little bit of the interview that I listened to, you were asking her about her drive, and she said, well, I just get bored. And that is the hallmark of the ever restless but eternally interested in things Gemini. So with her rising sign and her moon sign in Gemini, she's multi-talented and will always be so, and always looking for different ways to get her message out, and that would be in many different directions. And the Taurus, so she also deals in real estate, correct?
Correct, yes.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of a given for most Taurian people. The Taurus is an earth sign, and Gemini is an air sign. And the Taurus earth says, I want as many pieces of this earth as I can get, and has an absolute instinct for markets and houses and how to sell that and also capitalize on it in terms of investments and money. So she knows very well from her chart that, you know, money's important, but just making money is not so interesting, and it has to be an expression of her artistic abilities, which she has a lot of.
Hey, do you see anything in her chart, life chart, that would indicate she's going to have three or four major life changes or shifts in perspective, or do you see it as something where it is an ongoing progressive path along a line without so much of a deviation as far as dramatic perceptions? Shifts.
You mean kind of shocks to the system?
Correct. Yeah.
Creative roundabout turn of events. Yes, definitely. It's a hard question to answer. She has a lot of planets, three, in the 12th house. And the 12th house is the hidden part of the chart. And usually there is a past life influence that is very important, or many past life influences. And so I would say that if something bubbles up from her unconscious or her past life consciousness, she could do an abrupt about face and, you know, sell the houses, get out, do something very, very different and more, we'll say, spiritually connected. I mean, that's not to say what she's doing now isn't unconnected, but more reclusive. She's not a very reclusive person, but she just might become for a while. If you're alluding to something health-wise, she has a lot of sensitivities to atmosphere, and if there ever is, I mean, Taurus is a pretty strong sign, and she's got a highly tuned nervous system, so I don't see, quote-unquote, disease or difficulty in that department, but if she has any kind of imbalance in her system, it's going to take a while to figure it out because of the Neptune presence in her house of health. So it would be very good for her to detoxify, you know, kind of stay on the straight and narrow as far as good food, low drugs, no drugs, and drinking go. So I guess I don't really understand what you mean by shocks.
Oh, shocks. I was just wondering if there was a point in time where, if you look at her chart, she's somebody who's going to experience, she's going to have a perception about life and reality that was going to be continually shifting. Sometimes a person opens their perception or they close their perception based on the events that are happening in their lives, based on their trajectory. I was trying to inquire to see if she was going to have major, like three or four or five different major shifts that fundamentally shake her foundation of how she perceives reality.
I don't know about that.
Okay.
I really don't. Okay. Taurus is a pretty solid citizen. And her mental acumen and ability to try on different ideas is very strong. But she comes back to her original focus.
Miss Constance Sellis, the Astro Freedom. I want to thank you for your wonderful analysis, Miss Pamela Page. To learn more about Miss Constance Sellis and get a reading done, get a chart done, Miss Constance Sellis, please go to her website at ConstanceDallas.com. Thank you so much, Miss Dallas.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
Joining us now is the clairvoyant cowgirl, internationally respected psychic medium and empath, Miss Lisa Kaza. You can learn more about Miss Lisa Kaza and get a soul analysis with Miss Lisa Kaza by going to her website at lisakaza.com. Miss Kaza, what can you tell us about Miss Pamela Page?
Well, firstly, I'll say that for once, I actually listened to the interview. Normally, I go into my analysis without even listening to the interview, but this time I did, and I'm glad that I did, because I felt that Pamela had a couple of questions, because I feel that she's really growing, spiritually speaking, and so I think she's looking for some of these answers, and a few things stuck out for me that I figured I would focus on. Now, the first thing was the two of you made a joke saying that, well, maybe she was Mae West in a past life. Unfortunately, that's impossible.
Okay.
Because just with logic, Mae West passed on about 6 months after Pamela was born, so it's impossible. However, I do find this very interesting that she actually does have a connection to Mae West, and that's why she has such a love for her.
What kind of connection do you see? Or sense?
Well, I hear the words. Firstly, I'm seeing this as a fashion model. Late 1800s or mid to late 1800s. But, of course, fashion model in those times, of course, would be like black and white photography kind of thing. Definitely not what you'd see in the modern day world. I think it's a name, Tilly. And that's who I believe, or what I believe Pamela's name was back then. Very close to May. She, I'm being told, was the only one, one of the only ones that really supported Mae in her career path, which whatever Mae wanted to do, Pamela in that lifetime was her full 110% supporter. She loved everything that Mae did. And so she carried on this love of Mae into this lifetime. Now, the actual connection that she has, I'm hesitant, but I'm going to want to say that she was quite possibly her mother.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know anything about Mae West or her mother or anything like that, so if someone wants to do some research, if Pamela wants to do research herself, and find out, because like I said, I did come up with a name of Tilly, which is really odd, an odd name. So if she can find that, maybe that was her mother's name. I'm not sure. But that's the connection that I'm feeling. So she definitely does have this connection to Mae West. It's just not Mae West herself. Now, the second thing that, of course, really stuck out of the entire interview was the fact that Mount St. Helens was erupting during her birth. There is something to that. I was told in my meditation that not just Pamela, but other people as well, who were in fact born around that time, what was happening was they were basically, in basic layman's terms, they were going to be taking on the personality traits of what you would see in terms of like what a volcano represents. That sounds a little bit confusing, but I'll explain in a minute. It'll I'll fit the pieces together in a second. So after I was told that, the next thing that came into my head was she has a very strong, I guess you could say, ascended master working with her through her entire life. And the name I got was Pele, the goddess of fire, and it's a Hawaiian ascended master. And I found this really interesting that Pele, she presents trials and challenges to the human race with the expectation of producing strength and development. So this is where I feel Pamela has gotten a lot of her strength from, and the trials and the challenges that she has had to overcome, she's been working with and through Pele. Now, Pele is also connected to volcano. That's how I connected the dots there. So if you take that into consideration of her, I guess if you want to call a spirit guide, that's basically who it is for her, an ascended master. Now, I try to explain what a volcano represents metaphysically speaking. Firstly, it incorporates all four elements, earth, air, fire, water. So that means the person is very well grounded and very well rounded on top of that, because they have elements of all four elements. For example, earth would be to remain rooted in our foundational beliefs. And take a look at Pamela. She is very, I don't want to say old school, but she's very much like me. She considers the strong morals, the strong values, and how life was back in the day, this way it should be today, and I fully agree. And then air, it can make you ask yourself questions like, what kind of smoke signals am I sending out there? So, like, am I communicating effectively? Look how she communicates through her art, for example. Just her art alone sends out very strong communication to people. And what kind of effects are there in terms of my thoughts and actions? Another thing that I see that Pamela does quite frequently in all aspects of her work. So I found it very, very, very interesting that she has this connection going on between the volcano and the Pele goddess of fire.
Ms. Kaza, when I first met Ms. Page, I guess one of the first things I thought about when I met her, I was like, oh my goodness, this is the reincarnation of Genghis Khan. I just, one of the first things that kind of stuck out of my mind. And do you see any connection with her and Genghis Khan? I mean, I don't know, maybe personality-wise, or, you know, the fact that maybe she killed a bunch of people in the last lifetime, or she was just a warrior or something. I don't know. She just always seemed to have this, like, warrior aura about her. I didn't know if that resonated with you.
No, I have to say that I don't pick that up at all. And I actually wasn't being shown any other past life than what I was seeing in terms of the connection with Mae West, which, again, like I say, it is there. There is a connection. But I wasn't seeing anything as her being a warrior. I am getting just now that she was more of a witness.
Okay.
To something. Some kind of, like, major trauma and war. Like, I'm seeing, okay, so it's like rolling green hills. That to me represents Ireland. And it's going back, I'd have to say, 1400s. And I see her with another little girl. So I think that they're sisters, and they're running through these fields, these green fields, for as far as the eye can see. And it's just like her parents. I believe what happened in this lifetime was that her parents were killed. I do not know how. I'm not seeing that part. However, I am picking up the very distinct attitude of, well, damn you, I'm never going to let this happen again in my life, ever again, and I'm going to fight, kind of thing. I don't want anyone or anything taken from me ever again. So I guess I believe that that could very well be at least one of the catalysts behind the driving force behind her, so to speak, in this lifetime.
A final question I have for you, Ms. Kaza, is this. Ms. Page's mother, father, and sister are all in spirit at the present moment. Is there any collective message or messages they're trying to relay to Ms. Page at the present moment?
I'm getting a very loud and resounding let go. And I believe what that is referring to could very well be the heartache and the trauma that she has endured in her life, especially in terms of their loss or their passing. I feel that she is carrying a heavy burden in terms of that. And I think that, she had mentioned that she has been working with Chris Krepsik, or was it Jeff Casper?
Casper, yep.
Yeah. He's going to be helping her a lot with this letting go aspect. But I believe that through that work with him, she's going to get the very same message from her sister and parents, the same message of let go. It's okay to let go. And that they're actually there with her. They're giving her the strength. I think actually it was her sister that could very well have encouraged her in a way in order to seek the assistance of Jeff Casper. So I think that it was her sister that led her to that. But another thing that I'll say, and we're talking about, healing, like she's needing to heal and she is wanting to grow spiritually. So the message that I'm also getting is because she is in fact connected very strongly to the earth, I highly recommend that if she wants to utilize some gemstones and crystals to help her, they will do extremely well for her. She's going to find them very powerful, not just with her own healing and growth, but also in terms of success in business, in whatever path she wants to go. She can make those crystals work like a finely tuned piano if she desires. And the next thing I'm being told, excuse me, is, and this is something I think that she needs perhaps encouragement with. I don't know if this is in her mind right now, but it may be in the near future. But within 5 to 7 years, I'm seeing a book being written, at least one. Like I'm being told that there's about at least 5-6 books inside Pamela. And I feel that within about 5 years, just 5 to 7 years, I'm seeing one of these books coming out. And it's going to be a huge success. Huge.
Awesome.
But I think she needs to hear that so that she can kind of,
get the work on it.
Yeah, get up off her butt. I think I don't know what it is, what's holding her back, whether it's, I don't think it's a fear of failure. That's not in her. I'm not sure what this is that's holding her back, but she does need that little bit of a encouragement, a little bit of a nudge to get going because it's very much needed, actually. She's got a lot of wisdom in her, a lot of life lessons, a lot of experiences that should be passed along that she knows it, but she does need the encouragement to get the word out there. And when she does, she's going to be extremely successful, and I see her traveling a lot as well, promoting the books, doing a lot of speaking as a result.
Miss Lisa Kozla, the clairvoyant cowgirl, an internationally respected psychic medium and empath, thank you for your fantastic analysis of Miss Page. You can learn more about Miss Lisa Kozla and get a reading with Miss Lisa Kozla by going to her website at lisakozla.com. Miss Kozla, always an honor. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you, Ryan.
Okay, everyone, that concludes today's edition of the Outer Limits of Inner Truth Radio Show. Special thanks to our incredible guest and my sister from another mother, Miss Pamela Page. Special thanks, as always, to our virtues, Miss Carrie O'Connor, Miss Laura Lynn, Miss Lisa Kozla, and Miss Constance Ellis. To learn more about the Outer Limits of Inner Truth Radio Show, please go to our website at outerlimitsradio.com. Till the next time we meet, my friends, wishing upon you an abundance of peace, love, and beers. Take good care. Thank you so much for listening.